Hello and welcome to Refreshingly Honest Christian. My name is David Metcalf, your host. Welcome. How are you doing today? It's pretty weird. We're in the middle of counting up the ballots at the time of this recording, so kind of a strange time we're in. But who cares? We're here. We're listening to a podcast. This is not a political podcast. Thank God. I don't know about you, but I am just burnt out on politics. So I've just been checking news coverage, and it just feels like it's never ending. But all that to say, I am excited that you're here, and I've got an incredible guest today, Seth Andrews. He a really interesting guy. He was introduced to me by a former guest of the show, Hemant Mehta. And Seth Andrews, he is a author, speaker. He is the host of the Thinking Atheist online community, podcast, YouTube channel. Really interesting guy. He's written a few books. He calls himself a former Fox News Christian, which could not be more, applicable, I guess. It's just we're in a weird time with Fox News. Oh, let's say that. No, but it's a really great conversation. We dive in. We learn a little bit about his background, what led to his disbelief in God. It's just a really interesting story. And just hearing his journey, I just saw so much of myself in him. And it was just a really great conversation. So I'm glad you're here. So let's not waste any more time. Let's get right into it. Here's my conversation with Seth Andrews. Enjoy. All right, Seth Andrews, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for the invitation.
Of course, it's great to talk to you. Yeah, we have a mutual friend, Hemant Mehta. I was like, hey, man, if you know anybody that would be a good guest, you were the first person that he named. So here we are.
Yeah, Hemant's good people. You know, he's this kind, sweet, thoughtful, whip smart dude. And I met him, you know, like 10 years ago. And he's one of those guys. And a lot of people, when you get to know him, it turns out not to be a good thing.
Yeah, totally.
You know? You're like, oh, wow. Yeah. But Hemant's one of those guys where the more I got to know him, the more impressive he was.
Yeah.
So I appreciate the recommendation very much.
Yeah. Yeah, you know you're smart when you can make it on Jeopardy.
Well, you know, he's like a math teacher. His mind works in that way. He's always able to do equations. And, you know, me, I walk into the room and I can't remember where I put my car keys and I'm holding them in my hand.
Right.
That's where I've come in my midlife.
Yeah.
You know, and it's getting worse as I age.
Yeah. You know. Well, and how did you two meet? Just kind of through the internet or what's that story?
Well, you know, I had come out of religion and was kind of looking around bewildered, like, you know, what has happened to my life? And I was becoming introduced to the world of non-belief and atheist activism. And he was just one of those guys, you know. He hosted an atheist site, and I think we may have met at a conference or a convention somewhere. I don't have the specifics, but it was probably something along those lines.
Gotcha.
Because I was just starting to be a part of these conversations in a public way. And
yeah,
I'm sure our paths crossed like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice, Seth. Well, if you don't mind, we always start these conversations off pretty casually, and even just for the listeners, just to kind of get to know you a little bit better. So why don't you just tell us a little bit about your background, how you were raised, that whole story, and then that'll kind of lead into where we are now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I can synopsize it as best I can. It's a long story, but the short version is that I was raised in a fundamentalist Christian home.
Yeah.
My parents met at Oral Roberts University. My mother was a Greek New Testament teacher. She still is in her 80s.
Wow.
I mean, she was before COVID, you know. And I was raised in a devout, like a Bible literalist home. And I kind of got a sampling of all the different major denominations. Dad was hugely conservative, ex-Lutheran. Mom was Pentecostal slash Assembly of God. She believed in the speaking of tongues. So we went to an Assembly of God church for a while. But I went to a Baptist school, which was much more conservative. And, you know, I was that guy. I was a kind of a natural student leader. I was on stage. I was a spokesperson for Youth for Christ when I was in ninth grade. Couldn't even drive yet, and I was already standing on stage and giving people my quote-unquote wisdom as one of God's youth, you know?
Yeah.
And I fell in love with Christian music. It was kind of the soundtrack of my life. This was back in the 1980s. Amy Grant's Age to Age had just come out. Michael W. Smith, Stephen Curtis Chapman, Whiteheart, DeGarmo and Key, et cetera. And I was devout. Petra, you know, I'm sitting out in 12-degree weather waiting on the bookstore to open so I can get front row tickets to see Petra live in concert. I was that guy. I was that hardcore. And my love for Christian music translated soon into a career in Christian radio. I became a Christian broadcaster in 1990, started working like the, you know, the grunt shifts at KXOJ Radio in Tulsa, and kind of found my voice and developed my style and rose through the ranks. And Christian music became really popular nationwide in the mid-90s. And so I sort of rode that wave as KXOJ rode that wave. And you know, I segued out of Christian radio to some secular radio, Kiss FM here in town, and then video production. I produced church videos across the country. We'd travel and we'd help these churches communicate vision as they were building and expanding their ministries and buildings, et cetera. And you know, I kind of started, you know, it started back in the 90s, but I was becoming concerned, like less satisfied with a lot of the answers that I was getting, quote unquote answers. I you know, I realized I hadn't really been very thoughtful about my faith. I had sort of inherited it. And if we look at trends, most people they have the faith of their parents. You know, if I had been born in freaking Yemen, I wouldn't have been a fundamentalist conservative Christian. Right. I'd probably be Muslim. If I'd been born in Mexico, I'd be Catholic.
Yeah.
If I'd been born in one of the Eastern nations, probably some Eastern religion, et cetera. And I started to thought, well, how much of what I'm doing here is just kind of like a hand-me-down? Have I really kicked the tires and tapped on the glass kind of thing?
Yeah.
So in my 30s, I just kind of got fed up and decided to go back to square one and take a fresh look. And for me, the dominoes began to fall. And I actually said in my own life out loud the word atheist in regard to myself in 2008. That was a scary time.
Wow.
It was just a scary thing, you know. It's like, whoa, you know, what has happened in my life? And so I felt kind of by myself. I felt like I'm in Oklahoma. Everybody around here is a devout believer, or at least a casual believer in the Christian God.
Yeah.
And so I started a website, an online community to try to be a part of the conversation and to not feel quite so alone. And that community exploded. The podcast I host launched in 2010, been downloaded like, I don't know, 55 million times. And I've written a few books and I've had the honor of kind of speaking. You know, I'm not a great mind. I'm just some dude who knows how to string words together, who took the journey and kind of wants to share the journey with other people. So that's, you know, I guess that's the short version.
Yeah.
Sorry, you know, but I mean, that I've encapsulated decades of my life into about a 4-minute answer.
Oh, totally. No, that's a brilliant answer. And I appreciate it. Well, I mean, talking about, you said 2008, like it was such a scary time for you. Do you mind unpacking that a little bit?
Well, you know, there are a lot of implications for somebody who comes to the moment when they say, you know, I just don't buy this because, you know, my family remains devout and dad especially believes in literal hellfire and damnation. He believes the literal, you know, depart from me, all you who are cursed, into a lake of everlasting fire and damnation. And he believes in literal fire.
Yeah.
Moms rationalize that back toward, well, you know, it's separation from God. It's sadness and darkness out there in the ether, you know, but Dad, he's pretty hardcore. So wait a minute. What happens when they find out? They're going to flip. And all the Christian schools and all the churches and the memory verses and everything else that they've done. I mean, they invested their whole lives financially, yeah, emotionally, spiritually, et cetera, into making sure their kids became this. What happens when I'm, you know, I have that meeting? Mm. Hey, Mom, Dad, I know you've been doing this for decades and you've sort of downloaded your religion into me, but I think it's crap. You know? Totally. That's tough to do, you know, that. And then does it cost me my relationship with my family? Mm. My employers were devout believers. 80% of their clients were church clients.
Yeah.
Whoa, wait a minute. What happens now? I mean, what if they find, you know, they can't legally fire me. Mm. But we also know that discrimination works often between the letters of the law. Oh, we fired Seth because he has poor communication skills. Right. When the truth was, is that I was this sort of evil dude and they were afraid they were going to lose church business. What happens if I'm in my almost 40s and I lose the ability to pay my mortgage and my bills? And, you know, what other relationships will it cost me? What friends will disappear?
Yeah.
And then it's just scary anyway, because, you know, this is the safety net. This is how I've done it. This is my pattern. This is what's given me comfort and blah, blah, blah for so long. You know, this is a huge course change. What are the implications for the rest of my life? I couldn't sleep at night. You know, my gut was in a knot. I was terrified that I was going to lose everything.
Mm.
I don't think I'm being melodramatic. I mean, financially and relationally, I was really, I thought, what's going to happen to me next? But I also felt compelled to keep going. It's weird. It's like I knew the dominoes might fall, but I thought, I don't think I can go back. I don't think I can walk back through the door, because I'd always be sort of, I'd be forcing myself not to take the journey on my own terms. And so, you know, I'm still emotionally attached to the idea of hell.
Yeah.
So even though logically I'd come to the point where I think hell, even if it existed, would be a moral travesty, the idea of an eternal torture chamber for those who do not believe. I mean, worse than anything ever implemented by Hitler, Mao, Stalin, et cetera. I mean, just burning people alive, what, their flesh disintegrates and then what, reconstitutes, and you burn them again forever and ever. I mean, that's just crazy.
Yeah.
But I believed it for so long that that was real.
Yeah.
That I thought, well, what if I get this wrong? You know, I don't want to be tortured. I don't want to scream into the abyss until, well, without end. That kind of stuff latches onto your heart, you know.
Yeah.
It's useful, I think, for a lot of fundamentalist religions, not just Christianity, but, you know, you scare people with torture for not towing the line. And man, you can keep them from asking a lot of questions. You can keep them obedient. You can keep them in line, keep them on the quote unquote straight and narrow. Just scare them.
Mm.
Make sure that, well, you know, I sure don't want to go to hell, so I better not make waves.
Mm.
And it took me about a year and a half to overcome that. So there were a lot of gears in that machine.
Yeah. Jeez, Seth. I mean, that's remarkable. I mean, that alone, what I hear you saying is just, there was so much tied to your faith at that point. You know, it sound, what I'm hearing, there was a paycheck at that time. There was a lot of relationships at that time that you were maybe afraid of losing. And then, like you said, like, even though intellectually you're like, I don't buy this, emotionally, this idea of hell, it's like, I mean, you're absolutely right. It's like, if we think that what Hitler did was bad with the Holocaust, it's like, man, that's just like that. I mean, that's a walk in the park compared to what this God is that we've created, that apparently because you don't believe, that's it. That's the idea. Like, really? Like,
well, some of it too, I think, was, It had been for so long attached to my identity.
Yeah.
You know, I was this kind of pillar of the community. I mean, I'm not selling a really noble version of myself, but I was kind of Mr. Clean. I wrote in my 2012 book, Deconverted, that wherever I went, I was just kind of considered Mr. Clean. you know, yeah. Mr. Clean, Mr. Good, Mr. Whatever. And, you know, it's almost like you have to reintroduce yourself to yourself. Hi, I'm Seth. You know, I like this. I like that. I like long walks on the beach. You know, you have to sit down and you have to go and say, well, you know, what am I really about? You know, that kind of journey of rediscovery, I mean, that's pretty heavy. You're sort of having to introduce yourself to you 2.0.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a kind of a big thing to bite off and chew for sure.
Yeah. It's almost like you need a ceremony to memorialize, like, you know, like, let's have like an atheist
like
baptism.
Far in yeah. Star Trek, you know, I've achieved Kolinar, or not Ponfar, Kolinar or whatever. Yeah, no, I get that. You almost want to mark the transition in some way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and obviously I would have to imagine, like, even with that, whatever you want to call it, transition or, you know, you're kind of probably just coming to grips with like, yeah, I don't buy this. And I would assume you probably didn't for a while. I would have to imagine that, there might even be a part of you that's like, well, who am I? Like you said, identity. It's like this whole thing marks you in such a way. And even that whole like word Christian, it's like the naming power that comes with it. It's like, there's a whole, you know, depending on who you ask, there's a whole, you know, list of what that means, even for yourself. So that identity, so what I'm trying to get at is like, when you change that or whatever, it's like, you know, I would have to imagine like there's so much that remained still a part of you. Like, and I would just wonder like, would you be curious about like, well, are those parts of me like still intact? Like, am I a completely different person? Do you know what I mean? Like,
well, you know, I likened it to waking up from a coma. You know, when we watch the movies, you know, our hero wakes up and he jumps out of bed and he grabs the girl and saves the day kind of thing, you know. But the truth is that often people wake up very, very, very slowly. They regain consciousness slowly. So I was drifting. You know, I went from fundamentalism to, there were a few major events in my life. The death of Christian artist Rich Mullins in 1997. Mm. You know, I was charged to go online and talk about how God had called him home and he's in a better place and it's all part of his divine plan. And I remember thinking to myself at the time, like, this doesn't make any sense. Like, we're just coping. We've created a mechanism. We're drawing in the happy ending. But, you know, he's horribly killed in a car accident. And, you know, beloved by millions, his ministry cut down and blah, blah, blah. And I just thought, this feels constructed. 9/11 was big for me. Everybody's invoking God and talking about God and judgment from God. And I mean, even the Islamic extreme terrorists, you know, they were invoking God, everybody invoking God. And I just thought, this is all cause and effect. And so the whole time, all this plus 1,000 other small things are going on, I'm kind of stepping out like, okay, you know, the Bible, and a lot of people do this. Oh, the Bible's absolutely true. You know, it's mostly true. Well, some of it was for yesterday and some of it's for today. And then I was like, well, some of it's metaphor and some of it's literal. And then, you know what? It's an okay book, but you know, it's more about my relationship with Jesus.
Yeah.
And, you know, then I got to the point where I really, you know, a lot of people drift in that little membrane.
Yeah.
Because the implications of taking the next steps, you know, was there a Jesus and were his teachings moral teachings? All of them, certainly many of them were. Is Yahweh a moral creature? Is there any good reason to believe it? Do I not believe? I mean, that's a tough step to take.
Yeah.
And a lot of people then just sort of hang out in the periphery. There's casual cultural Christians.
Right.
But they don't know anything about their Bible. They know nothing about the origins of their faith.
Yeah.
They have never actually, I wrote about this in my latest book, Confessions of a Former Fox News Christian, a couple of guys in the Netherlands, and they took a Quran out to the streets of the Netherlands, and they quoted some really awful verses out of the Quran to people on the street, and they were just horrified. They're like, oh, that's crazy. That's barbaric. I can't believe people would ever hold to this. That's not moral. and they would do this to people, and then they slipped off the cover and revealed that they were reading out of the Christian Old Testament.
Mm.
And that the verses that had actually caused these people a real moral grief were actually rooted in their own Christianity. And it was interesting to see that cognitive dissonance happen. They were struggling to reconcile it. Well, you know, God is good. You know, I mean, they'd already emotionally attached themselves. And when you make an emotional connection, it's almost like a family member. And if you walk away, then it's like grieving a member of the family. You grieve the loss sometimes. And that keeps a lot of people from asking the final questions, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a big thing that we get into on this podcast is the whole idea behind Refreshingly Honest Christian is the idea that as Christians, we all have doubts and we all have these questions, many of us, that just beneath the surface, if we were to be honest with ourselves, we would see that they're there. and I think for me, my hope is... whether you're a skeptic or a believer, it's just that you would have the courage to ask those questions, to answer them honestly, and wherever it leads you, that's great. You know what I mean? Like, I think something that bothers me so much in a lot of particularly Christian podcasts or whatever is it's just this thinly veiled attempt at getting, like you said, getting people to believe what you believe, or it's like this evangelistic effort. And, that in and of itself is just off-putting. You know what I mean?
You know, it was interesting when you sent me the invitation to speak, and I'm so glad to be here.
Cool.
I'm like you. I'm all about conversation.
Yeah.
When you said it's called Refreshingly Honest, and I thought, well, you know, do you have the position that you think a lot of Christians are, because I don't know. I mean, like when I was a devout believer, I wasn't lying to people. I felt like I was genuinely, honestly sharing my faith and what I felt like was the truth. I mean, do you feel like that there is enough dishonesty that, you know, there is a need for refreshingly honest Christianity? I was just kind of trying to reverse engineer the name. I'm just curious.
Yeah.
What's that about?
Yeah, absolutely. And I appreciate the question. I think more and more people, more particularly millennials, are looking outside of the church because what they're getting on a Sunday, what they're getting from a pastor in particular, is it's the party line. It's the thing that you're supposed to say because you work at a church to keep the donations coming in. And that, you know, that bleeds into us as Christians, those who are, you know, following these pastors, right? Like, I think, by and large, Christianity, there's this culture of kind of fake it till you make it, so to speak, or just pretend, just stuff it down, like, this is the magic kingdom, right? I definitely thought in naming the podcast, there's a huge need for honesty because I don't see a whole lot of honesty. I think a lot of conversations that I've had with church leaders, or just even friends, here's what I really believe, but I can't share that, you know, otherwise I'd lose my job, or here's what I really think. And so that disconnect between who you are on a Sunday or, you know, it's just so off-putting. And
well, I mean, I think a lot of people are afraid of, I mean, if you say I doubt or I'm not sure or I have questions, a lot of people flip out. You know, I've talked to people who are involved in ministry in churches, you know, they're deacons or on the worship team or even pastors, you know.
Mm.
And you're right. If they were to say, man, you know, I struggle with this. This doesn't make any sense to me. And if they were to just be honest, the fact that they were not, the word's not perfect, but you know what I mean? They didn't have this clear black and white line, belief, non-belief. They weren't there solidly 1,000%. For them, it threatens the structure, it threatens the faith, it threatens the reputation of the church. And those people are often cast off.
Yeah.
And so what they do is they take the very human journey that they're on and they cram them down into their gut and they say nothing and they're just tortured by it.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, wouldn't the best teachings of Jesus welcome an honest conversation about this stuff? You know, is when did it not be okay to be human and to say, you know what, I don't get this. Mm. And I'd like a good answer on this. I think that's a valid question. And then someone else can say, you know what, here's kind of what I think, but you're right. Well, let's talk some more about it. Instead, you know, the walls go up and the platitudes come out and the judgment, you know, kicks in and people flip out. And man, you know, and meanwhile, many of the people who flip out, if they're to be honest with themselves, they're having the same conversations. You know, they're on the outside, they're sure. On the inside, you know, I'm not going to say it out loud because the consequences to me might be dire. I totally understand what you're talking about.
We're going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsors. David here. You already know. That's right. We have sponsors. Today's show is brought to you by Audible. Audible is our favorite. We love Audible around here. Why read books when you can listen to them, right? I don't know. Reading books is fine too, I guess, if you like them. But I love Audible because really, I don't have a ton of time to sit down and read very much for pleasure. And so I have stuff in the background. I'm listening. I'm in the car. I'm grocery shopping. I'm doing the dishes, listening to a book. It's great. I absorb information a lot easier auditorily. And so why not? Audible. Freaking audiobooks are great. So you should definitely take us up on this. If you haven't tried Audible before, you can get your first audiobook absolutely free. That's right. Just go to audibletrial.com/refreshinglyhonestchristian. You can get any book of your choice. Everything is spiritual. That's a good one. I mean, I don't know. We've been talking a lot about it. I mean, if you're curious, you should definitely pick that up. And I think it's like $14.95 a month. After that, you can cancel any time. And so check it out. audibletrial.com/refreshinglyhonestchristian for your free audiobook, and you get to support us, the podcast, which means a lot. Also, you can support us on Patreon. If you don't already know, we have a Patreon. You can buy me a coffee. Obviously, this podcast is a labor of love, and so if you want to support what we're doing here on the show, if this podcast has done anything for you in any way, you can support us on Patreon. You can go to Patreon. Right now, I have a devotional series called Read the Bible With Me. We also give you access to content early. And right now, we're actually giving away Jesus pins. So if you like Jesus and pins, it's just the show art of our podcast. And we'll send you that as a part of our small but mighty tribe. And so it's just one way to show your pride in the podcast. You can put it on your backpack, put it on your jacket, something. I don't know how you roll, but it really means a lot if you want to support us on Patreon for as low as $3 a month or whatever works for you. Honestly, the way that we look at it is, if a few bucks fell out of your pocket every month, that's like the just right amount. So if you want to support independent work, this podcast, all this stuff that we're doing, really means a lot, and so feel free to do that. And that's it. Patreon.com/David Metcalf. So you look me up on Patreon. There I am. That's me, the host here, Refreshing the Honest Christian. And so that's all we have for plugging on the show. That's it. Back to the show. Yeah. Well, and who is it serving at the end of the day? If your whole job is to help lead or guide or, you know, shepherd people, you know, that's not serving anybody. Rob Bell, I'm sure you'll remember him.
Yeah.
We just had him on the podcast, and I mean, he's the biggest he's the person who was like the most honest when Love Wins came out, speaking of hell. And in the church, like they exiled him for it.
Dude, I was still in the faith when he came out and said he didn't buy that hell was a moral thing. He didn't think God would ever use it. And my church, I think they even preached a message wrapped around him.
Yeah.
That he'd watered down his faith and he'd walked away and you know, this is not God's will. I mean, he was like an object lesson.
Yeah.
And it's an amazing get that you got him on your show. That must have been a compelling conversation. I didn't mean to interrupt. Forgive me. I was on the top of my tongue, you know?
Yeah, no, I love hearing that. Well, you mentioned, you know, your church, they gave an entire like message.
Where was I
around it?
Where was I? I can't remember. I don't think I'm not imagining it, but I remember it was either him or it was, the pastor, it was definitely Carlton Pearson. He was the pastor.
Yeah.
Of a local church called Higher Dimensions, right? Mm. Dynamic Bible believing church.
Yeah.
And he came to this point when he was like, hell makes no moral sense. There's no, this is not what Jesus would ever do. You know? So he walked away.
Mm.
And this whole city cast him off.
Yeah.
His church cast him off. I remember going to a church called Grace Fellowship. They did a whole sermon talking about how he had lost his, they didn't say he'd lost his mind, but I mean, it was just that kind of thing. Like, this man is, he's not preaching. He's a false prophet it was something along those lines.
Yeah.
And, you know, talk about a guy being true to himself with everything on the line.
Yeah.
He was on the top of the world. He was speaking all around the world. He was successful in almost every sense of the word. But by coming forward and saying, no, I got to take a moral stand, he paid a massive price for doing it.
Yeah.
I reached out to Carlton Pearson to see if he'd ever talked to me. He never got a response. You know, sometimes the word atheist in your show title scares. I don't know why. Maybe you didn't even see the message. But you know, Rob Bell's another great example. He was true to himself and his own moral compass, and a lot of people cast him out.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, well, that really did coincide with a big part of my story, which, so I wasn't raised Christian. My whole background was, you know, I mean, if anything, we never went to church. My grandparents who raised me, we never talked about God. And I feel like in the U.S., if there was like a default sort of religion, it would be Christianity. So in that sense, I think there's that gravitational pull, but when I first started going to church, one of the first Sundays I remember was I vividly have this picture of walking into the church and the pastor, is talking about Rob Bell and he's saying that this man is a heretic and he, in this book, like it is false doctrine, do not read this. And I'm like, I don't even know who this guy is. I would have never known who this person is had you not brought it to my attention. So it was really surreal talking to him just because that in my mind, and also just to give you a little bit more background. So, you know, as I really started to take my faith seriously, my progression was always, I wanted to be a pastor. That was always the trajectory for me. And so, you know, I did the internships. I went to Bible college. I, you know, did a few years in ministry. And, I mean, psychologically, like from a tribalistic, sense, like you see how Christians, really do like shoot their own, like I've heard prominent pastors say like, you know, Christians or the church, it's like the only army that shoots its wounded.
Well, I mean, I think you'll find that in a lot of tribes, but it's hugely prevalent and very ironic in Christianity. There is no doubt.
Yeah. But I mean, it was just, for me as somebody who does have doubts, somebody who does have questions, like, and really hell in particular, that was always the thing that I just could not stomach. Like even in the sense like, oh, well, don't worry. Like you have afterlife insurance. Like Jesus has saved you. You're good. Like, beyond, I'm like, no, like I don't know that I can accept this idea that people who I know who are good people, and who, by the way, are far more Christ-like than many Christians that I know are going to hell simply for the fact that the way that their intellectual furniture is arranged, the you know, they believe the right set of ideas or beliefs or whatever. And so, you know, even on this podcast, that's definitely been something where it's just become more and more defined where I'm like, yeah, I don't believe this, you know? And so partly the reason why I even stuck with the name Christian was because I'm like, I feel like I want to reclaim that word because I feel like, first of all, that name is just, you know, I mean, Trump is a Christian. So what does that tell you? You know?
Well, he claims to be. I get that. Well, you know, I struggle. I talk to a lot of people who are professing Christians, and their Christianities, I mean, you can just drive down the street. You know, there's the First Baptist Church. They disagree with the Second Baptist Church, who disagrees with the family church, who disagrees with the Lutheran, the Methodist, the Catholic, to somebody. I mean, you know, we talk about God is supposedly not the author of confusion. Can you think of a faith more confused, more contradictory? I mean, everybody's preaching a different shade of a book that's supposed to be the instruction manual for living. And then more and more here, and you mentioned that millennials not interested in fundamentalism. They're not getting what they need from the church. They don't want to be judgmental like their parents and grandparents. You know, they don't hate gay people, and they don't believe in hellfire, and they don't want to run around just judging all the time. But I think part of the challenge is if you are walking away from fundamentalism, is there a problem with your religion's fundamentals?
Yeah.
What kind of religious faith are you practicing? Then what role does the Bible, the foundational book of Christianity, play? A lot of people walk away from the Bible, and then it's about a personal relationship, right? Mm-hmm. It's not a religion, it's a relationship. My God speaks to me, we talk, I feel him in my heart. And then that becomes a challenge because the Islamist says the same thing. You know, I feel Allah in my heart, and he has told me that he's real. And you know, it could be Krishna, it could be any God anywhere, your personal experience. So if I'm a neutral observer and I'm at a table with all of these different people who are claiming a personal experience, they've walked away from the Bible or their holy book, and they say, well, it's about this intangible thing that only I can really experience under my skin. Mm. How would I, as a neutral observer, be able to determine which one, if any of them, was real?
Right.
And beyond that, is there a red flag? Is there a flashing light, you know, an alarm light, if you have to say, well, I'd reject this scripture?
Yeah.
Like, I don't judge gay people, so I'm going to just ignore or reject the verses where God had homosexuals killed, executed in the Bible. I've decided that those are not moral, or they were for another time, and I'm just going to walk over. So that becomes this weird, subjective, arbitrary journey where you're just sort of cherry picking.
Right.
You know, this opens up a big can of worms.
Right.
How do you get to where you are in your own sort of custom fitted faith?
Right.
And I think that's a question that a lot of people inside and outside of religions, they have to face.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah. That whole idea of cherry picking, it's something that I've run into on this podcast. Like, I've been accused of having, well, you have holes in your theology. And I'm like, well, there's just certain things that I can't buy, but I also don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. And, you know, there's a lot here that, that I do struggle with, that I wrestle with, but there's also a lot here that I think is good and worthwhile and it does have the ability to, you know, it has shaped me for the better. You know, I can't deny that. Like, you know, a lot of the experience that I've had with the church, like, you know, a lot of it's been, you know, there's been a lot of bad, and I won't deny that at all. And you know, we've gone at great length on this podcast, but there's also a lot of good, and I don't want to discount that. But yeah, it's a strange phenomenon where it is. I think for me, more and more, I'm just hoping that, and I feel like the thinking atheist, like, you have these resources where I feel like you're giving people the ability to explore. Like you mentioned, what really stuck out to me at the beginning, you mentioned like I had to keep going. And I feel like a lot of people would identify with that, where they're just like, yeah, I don't really know what I believe, to be honest. Like, I don't really know. Yeah, like, I might have some holes in my theology. Like, I definitely don't want to be a cafeteria Christian, that whole idea. But, you know, I just don't know what I believe right now. And I think a lot of us feel this pressure to just have it figured out and to have it have a 10, you know, a 10 bullet point list of, well, here's why, here's what I believe, here's why. And it's perfectly, like, you know, it's bulletproof, you know, it's,
We like clean lines, don't we?
Yeah. I mean,
we like it to be cut and dry. Well, I'm going to make clear to anybody on your audience, I am not the thinking atheist.
Okay. Oh, okay.
The thinking atheist is, I don't proclaim, I host a show and site and community called The Thinking Atheist.
Yeah.
I am not a great mind. Okay. Mm. I'm just a dude. The Thinking Atheist is an icon, and the icon represents the rejection of faith.
Mm.
You know, Christopher Hitchens once said, it's called faith because it's not knowledge. I don't think faith is a satisfying way to determine what's true. You can take anything on faith. You know, the Islamist takes the Quran on faith. You've got people of all religions. You know, you got people who believe all kinds of things, and they do it on faith. That's a belief over knowledge position.
Yeah.
And it becomes even more problematic when we see that Christianity and many religions, that's a belief culture. You know, God, Jesus said, you believed in God, also believe also in me. We are, you know, the Christians commanded to believe, you know, confess with your heart that Jesus is Lord, believe in your heart, confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord, believe in your heart, God raised him from the dead. So to be commanded to believe something is a weird thing.
Mm.
Because I don't think, like, I don't choose to believe in gravity. You can hang me over a building and you can say, all right, I want you with a gun to your head to not believe in gravity. Well, I already have that in, I know it works. I know there is gravity, you know, I didn't choose this.
Mm.
And I think to a lot of people, they struggle with non-belief, but they verbally dress it as belief because they are commanded to sort of volunteer that, to express that, to outwardly live that. And man, I sure would like to see a culture where we're more interested in knowing for sure. And here's the rub. We hate "I don't know" as an answer. How did the universe begin then, Seth, if God didn't conjure it? And I have to look you in the eye and be like, I don't know. You know, I do not know. And you don't know either, right? This is kind of how I follow it up. You have a story, but I don't know. And it's a phrase, I think, and an answer that we have to be prepared to be honest about.
Yeah.
We don't know a lot of stuff. And if we don't know, this fake it till you make it thing that you mentioned, you know, the honest response is to say, I don't know, but let's commit ourselves as best we can to trying to find out.
Yeah.
And if we don't, we still have to be honest about the idea that we don't know.
Yeah.
And that's a scary thing to do in a confidence culture where you're supposed to just name it and claim it.
You know? Yeah, totally. Gosh, name it and claim it. I just wince at that.
My mom came from that kind of church.
Yeah.
You know, all you have to do is believe it and claim it. God's going to provide. Of course, it was a nebulous provision. You know, you may get a check in the mail, or it may be a job promotion in 10 years, or it might be a jewel in your crown after you die. Mm. You know, there's like, what exactly am I getting? And what I've claimed. So they, you know, there's kind of a silly putty answer. They could mold it into whatever they wanted when you named it and claimed it.
Yeah. Gosh. Well, Seth, I have a question for you. I asked this to Hemant when he was on, and I found it to be a very curious answer, and I loved it. And so I'd just be curious to know what you would think. So obviously, given your background, you know this little crazy little subculture well, this weird, wacky world of Christendom. I wonder for you, given some perspective, obviously, 2008, like, a little over 10 years, like, you've kind of been outside of this world of, you know, you now identify as an atheist. Where do you feel like we've gotten Jesus wrong most?
Where do you feel like you've gotten Jesus wrong?
Yeah, as a whole, like when you look at the church today.
Well,
yeah.
you know, there's so much to unpack here. You know, I mean, we can approach it, the Christ story historically, meaning that the Jesus story originates in the Gospels of the New Testament, which were written long decades after the alleged life and death of Jesus Christ. I think the earliest gospel was written in, what, 79 CE, you know, Christ, if he had existed, was long gone. There are different Jesuses in the different gospels. So if you read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, Jesus is actually described in different ways. He does different things, like he lived differently. He was born differently. He died differently. So there is a contradictory element to the Christ story. I mean, there are four conflicting versions of the empty tomb, his last words on the cross, the centurion's request, how he was born, where he went after he gave the Sermon on the Mount. It's, I mean, that there are so many conflicting stories. I think you have to get into the fact that this is not corroborated by any contemporary historian. You know, a great example is when Christ died on the cross, and then all of a sudden the saints were resurrected and they walked the streets of Jerusalem. I mean, what a historic event. The undead saints were walking a parade through Jerusalem, and yet not one contemporary historian looked around and thought, well, this is newsworthy. I mean, it's written, no one else reported this story. So, you know, you've got the historical problems. You've also got the moral problems, because the Bible can be whatever I want it to be. It can be a good book or it can be a terrible book. So while Jesus did talk about some wonderful stuff that we can take inspiration from, helping the poor and charity and turning the other cheek, which I think is sometimes good, not always, you know, don't be vengeful, you know, be kind, be good to people. He also said in Matthew that he hadn't come to bring peace. He came to bring a sword. And if it meant turning families against each other in this popularity contest, he was prepared for a father to hate his son, a mother to hate her daughter. This is not a moral teaching. You also have the idea that in the Holy Trinity, Jesus and Yahweh are the same. And Yahweh is a genocidal maniac, jealous and petty and nasty and cruel, who killed hundreds of thousands of people at a time, you know, who received burnt human sacrifice with Jephthah's daughter and inflicted plagues. And I mean, it's just insanity. You know, he's ordering his armies, Moses's armies, in to execute pregnant women and unborn babies. I mean, you know, and that's, if Jesus and Yahweh are the same, now you've got a moral problem.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I think after that, you've got this idea that most people's Jesus reflects their own culture. I mean, there's a reason that we have white Jesus in the United States, and we have a brown Jesus in the Middle East, and there's an Asian Jesus, and there's a Native American Jesus, and there's every culture has decided that Jesus looks like them.
Yeah.
This is common with cultures and their religions. Their gods are reflections of them and validations of them personally. Those are just three of many challenges I have with this notion of Jesus Christ. I do think if you don't take him as a literal God-man who walked the earth, and I don't know if there was an actual guy, I don't think anybody can know at this measure, we can still look through the New Testament and find some stuff like we can in a lot of other texts and say, well, you know, that's a good teaching. I'll grab that, you know, charity and goodness and kindness and hanging out with people who are disadvantaged to make their lives better. I mean, we can grab those nuggets and we can implement those in our lives, but I don't think it requires a belief in a God man who walked the earth and did miracles.
Yeah. Gosh. So much to unpack there. That was that you're just
what happens
killing
when
these
you have
answers.
A radio host on as a guest. I just blather on.
No,
blah,
I love
blah,
it.
Blah, blah, blah.
No, it's good. Yeah. Two things come to mind. So the first, Hemant, one of the things he said, I think Christians like the idea of Jesus more than anything he actually said, which I resonated with.
That may be true.
And I mean, it's funny, like the second thing I think of when you talk about like this difference between like this Old Testament God and Jesus It's like recently I I came across a tweet. Somebody said, like, well, you know, Trump has COVID, obviously. It's like, yes, I'm praying for Trump, but I'm praying to the Old Testament God.
Oh, that's like, brutal.
That's brutal. Yeah.
That's brutal.
Yeah. No, well, I think that's so fascinating. And I think, you know, for me, there's this idea that, okay, like this whole idea of literalism, reading the Bible literally. And for so many people, it's like, no, it's exactly, you can read it exactly. And that's exactly as it happened. And like you said, there's these differences even amongst the gospels, like there's inconsistencies, you know, there's different accounts, like, you know, I mean, for me, it's one of the things that I've kind of moved towards. And even you talked about this idea, like, you know, is that a metaphor? Is that literally, you know, for me, I've kind of moved away from this idea of like, I'm like, if we found out that Jesus was not a real person who existed at a place and time, it's like the story itself, I feel like, it's like, it is, there's like this mythology in the sense that like the story itself that it's telling, I think it has the ability to transform and help people. It also has the ability to really, cause a lot of harm. We see that in a lot of ways, like the way that the Bible is used to justify a lot of horror. Like, you know, I was just watching a documentary about fundamentalist Christians trying to overturn Roe v. Wade. And it's like, and to them, it's like this idea that's like, you know, that's the most godlike thing. And it's like, I don't know. It's just interesting, man. I could talk about this stuff all day. So So
if you were to then open the Quran and you were to find some meritorious verses about love and goodness and whatnot in the Quran, would you be able to extract enough? Let's say you were able to extract enough from the Quran, you know, you're grabbing the good philosophies for living. Would you then be comfortable calling yourself like a practicing Muslim of some stripe?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, and to your point earlier, this isn't me trying to dodge it, I promise.
No, you're fine.
like, yeah, like if I were born in India, I'd probably be a Hindu. Like, you know, there's that idea of, and again, I concede that that's a part of it. Like, even though I wasn't raised in a Christian environment, a Christian family, like, let's not be oblivious to the fact that, you know, in Western culture, Christianity is like what we gravitate towards. So yeah, I would have to say that. I think so. And I think for me, I've never been more open to different, ancient texts like the Quran or, the Gita, the Bhagavad Gita. I always screw that actual name up, so I just call it the Gita.
I got you. Totally. I'm tracking totally. I got you.
In terms of like what I call myself that, you know, I think it's interesting. Like initially I'm like, I hesitate saying yes, but it, like, again, it's like, if you find that this story, or this makes the most sense to you, I think you would have to say that. And so I think for me, I hope that I'm in a place of openness and that's where I'm at, honestly, right now. Like I'm still holding on to this, I guess, blanket term of Christian, because, you know, it's kind of the idea of like, whoever brings you to the dance, that's who you dance with the one who brung you, that kind of idea.
That's a great line. That's a great line for religion.
Yeah. Totally. So I'm definitely in that space, I think, but as I explore, I am so far out there where I'm like, I think to a lot of Christians in particular, and we have a lot of Christian listeners, it's like, they're afraid for me, like, oh, you're falling away. And it's like, no, man, like the God that I believe in is so much bigger than our little thing we've reduced it to, the little divisions that we have to, like, well, I'm in this tribe and you're in that tribe. And like you said,
all the dividers, all of little denominations,
yeah,
that splinter us kind of thing, or
yeah, all the denominations of like, yeah, well, we, you know, we've interpreted it correctly and we've got it. It's like, I don't know, man. I think what I, and what I've loved so much about this conversation is I feel like I would have to say, I agree with you on more things than I don't. And it doesn't matter what we call ourselves to, you know, to a certain degree. And I think more and more, if Christians in particular, because I feel like they're the ones who are the most divisive in this area, if Christians in particular could see that, the world would be a heck of a lot better place. And so, yeah.
So, man, you realize now that the major denominations of this country would be horrified at a man like you, right? If you go to the Baptist Church's mission statement, the Assembly of God, I mean, they're Bible is absolutely inerrant and perfect and literal and true. The Methodist, yeah, not quite as much. And then you drift into the Episcopals, et cetera, you know.
Yeah.
But you said something that I want to, let me preface, if your listeners would, you know, take the advice of an atheist.
Of course they would.
Let me throw it out and you can take it or leave it. But I think David is, don't let me put words in your mouth, but the truth is, a worthy Jesus, a truly loving Jesus, he is not sitting around waiting for us to trip on the pebbles of theology.
Mm.
You know, if Jesus exists, that Jesus loves us and gets that we're imperfect and gets that we're going to screw up and gets that, you know, we're doing our best and we're just trying to figure it out and isn't going to freaking punish us when we screw up.
Mm.
It also, I think that line of thinking lends itself to the question of why in the world, like, do apologists exist? Why do pithy humans who have screwed up everything else in the universe, apparently, why are they charged to explain God to everybody else? And why can't they agree with each other on the basics? I mean, you put 50 apologists in a room, ask them about a literal creation, six-day creation. You ask them about, is the Holy Spirit, do you get it when you ask Jesus into your heart? Is that a separate prayer? Speaking in tongues? How do you baptize? Does, yeah, Christ still do miracles today? Is hell a real fiery place, or is it just annihilation? I mean, just ask them the basics. And it's a freaking, it's Thunderdome. Mm. They just lose their minds at each other, you know? And I think God himself, you know, he is... you know, I think he should bear the responsibility of parting the curtain of the sky and demonstrating himself without question if he exists. But beyond that, a worthy God, he's not going to sit around and find excuses to punish us for the imperfection that he knows we already have. A truly loving God would be like, you know, they're doing their best. Now, how would you treat a regular child, you know, one of your human children? You know, you might disagree with the decision, or that's not how I would do it, or they made a mistake and they're trying to make it right, but they've got a good heart. I mean, you don't sit there and find reasons to penalize and punish. You think, well, I love this person. I'm going to help them however I can. I want them to be the best versions of themselves, and I'll always love and be there for them. That's what a parent does.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's probably a meritorious view of a worthy Jesus Christ, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. 100%.
Look, I'm married to a God believer. You know what I'm saying? Mm. I mean, she's a casual believer, but the idea that we have more in common than we have apart is often the case. I find it's true often beyond religion. Sometimes in political parties or philosophies, other examples of people who, you know, we've got these points of division, maybe even contention. But if you look at the big picture, you know, we love people and we want to do the right thing and we love to laugh and, you know, we want to try to build a better world and, you know, we enjoy each other's company.
Yeah.
And this idea that, an atheist can't befriend a Christian, can't befriend a Muslim, can't befriend a Scientologist, et cetera. And we can have our moments. And there are discussions to be had when, you know, we get into things like bigotry and the dehumanization of others. But I mean, just people who have this disagreement, but who share that kind of, I genuinely want to do the right thing and I've got a good, kind heart. Those people, I think, should look past their differences or try to live around them, at least in atonement to try to celebrate what they do have in common. We are all the human condition.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny. I don't know about you, Dave, but in the Twitterverse, conversation seems to be dying. People are not talking to each other. They're kind of shouting at each other. And that's a bit disheartening.
Yeah. Yeah. It's who has the most pithy comment to top what you said, or.
And I've been guilty.
Yeah. So same.
I'm a surgical strike. I will go in and
I love it.
You know, throw out the zinger.
I love it.
I'm not proud of it. But at the same time, I find the word I like is de-escalation.
Mm.
There's this tendency to assume the worst about the other party because it's easier for me to win, quote unquote, if I demonize you.
Yeah.
If you are the worst person in the world, then all bets are off and I can be as awful as I need to be to put you down.
Yeah.
And that so often cheats us. It dehumanizes us. We start to go after this caricature of the person instead of the person itself. And you know, when are minds going to be changed? If I shout at you and you shout at me, our walls go up, we fortify our positions, we're in a defensive posture. When the world of minds get changed, the minds get changed when people operate with conversation in a position of safety.
Yeah.
And respect, mutual respect. And man, you know, I'm a little scared. Like I'm scared of what social media has done to me and what it's doing to the culture and what the future holds. You know, it's a little weird. I don't want to see interactions between human hearts go away because we've sacrificed it on the altar of 280 characters on Twitter.
Wow. Gosh. Yeah. That's spot on. And I feel like conversations like this, Seth, what we're doing right now, it's like, I mean, it's silly, but it's like, if you need to start a podcast to have conversations again, go for it. I think the things that we've done the things we've cooked up to, like you said, demonize, and the ways that we justify it, the things that I've heard Christians say, like they've fallen away and they don't know the truth. We have the truth and they don't. Like this, all this unhelpful rhetoric that I would argue, number one, isn't true. and number two, it's just, it's causing division. It's causing hatred oftentimes, you know, it's why people hesitate. Like you said earlier, like it's why I'm sure you, even with the name Christian, like, oh God, I guess like I'm going to go for this morning. Cause we're so exhausting. Like we're like, I don't like talking to Christians like more than half the time. They always have their little quips. They always have their little thing that they need to defend. And it's
some of it, I think, is a human thing. Like I know some, a lot of amazing religious people. And I know some horrible human beings who are professing atheists. Mm. And ultimately, you know, it's not about the label. It's like, what kind of person are you?
Yeah.
And I think the othering of people, you know, it comes from a variety of places. I'm not a psychologist, but I've done a lot of this. I think sometimes it's there's fear, right? Fear of the other.
Yeah.
So the more people look like me, talk like me, act like me, think like me, the more validated I am.
Mm.
And if someone comes in and they're not doing it like me, I'm threatened by that because I'm not being validated in what I do. I think that's a position of really tragic insecurity.
Yeah.
I think there's a flavor of, there's a superiority complex. Some people like to walk in and simply just feel better than other people. You know, they walk in and they're like, well, I'm looking down my nose from my high mountain at you, the unwashed down in the trough.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of reasons that people kind of other people. And I'm not saying that tribes and communities don't have their uses. I think we're a communal tribal kind of species. I think we crave getting together. I think that explains a lot of the attraction of the church. I mean, I understand church. Like I totally get it. You know, you come together with people of like mind. You're welcomed at the door. They offer you coffee. They've got a place for your kids. You get to enjoy communal music. You get to listen to hopefully an inspiring message,
right,
where you are sort of reinforced in a sense of inspiration and purpose. And these the friends you have, the music that you love, the activities that you do, the clothes that you wear. You know, it really is an attractive thing. I think that also keeps a lot of people from asking questions because, man, if I decide that the fundamentals of my faith don't make any sense morally, scientifically, historically, I don't want to lose my family. I don't want to lose my community. I love these people. I love going to church. I love doing these things. And I think the reason is because because we're a naturally communal species. And even in the atheist culture, you know, we get together, we have conventions and, you know, evenings at the pub. I'm not a drinker, but some people like to go out to the pub or they have game night or movie night or whatever, because I think people have always loved to get together with people of common interest to share those interests. I mean, you see that at everything from Comic-Con to bowling night to a rock concert to something else. We as human beings, we love doing things together almost always. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when your culture then is a religious one, I think it becomes a lot scarier to start to say, well, are the basic tenets of that religion factual? And if I challenge it, what are the relational communal consequences to me? Will I lose the people I love and care about? And I understand that. I understand the appeal of church, and I understand a tremendous desire not to blow it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I didn't mean to go off on bunny trail, but it just popped into my skull.
I love it. I love it, Seth. Yeah. And gosh, I wish more people thought like you did. And I think this conversation is, I mean, it's helping me. And you talked a little bit about fear. What it made me think of was there's also a fear of, I think, unknown. Like, this is classic hero's journey kind of mythology, which is, you know, well, I don't know where this is going to take me. I don't want to talk to that person because I don't know. I don't want to say the wrong thing. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to offend. I don't want to, you know, all of this stuff where, you know, we're at times where, like, I do feel like I'm, oh, have I not studied enough? Is this person going to think I'm an idiot? Like, because I haven't read The God Delusion, like,
No. Yeah.
No. And I'm not saying you, I just in particular, I think more and more, I think if we can get back to this sense of humanity and talking to one another, like you're describing. And yeah, I think no matter how you identify yourself, if you're a Christian, if you're atheist, if you're Muslim, if you're Jewish, like, it is a deeply human thing to gather and to discuss and to bond over
And what I love about you, David, and I'm not putting words in your mouth, but you are at this awesome point, I think many of us are, where you don't start with the answer with a capital A and then ask the question. Mm-hmm. Right? Because that's a cheat. Okay, wait a minute. You know, I think you're asking the questions and you are preparing yourself for an honest journey to try to discover the answer. And I'll be totally cool. I mean, if that answer is Jesus and you do it on your terms, cool. I mean, my big thing is that I think your life isn't being handed to you by somebody else. You're not a hand-me-down of somebody else's theology or value system. You're carving the path, you're blazing the trail, you are trying to figure it out, like we all are. And I think we share that. We have that in common. You know, to be able to say, is it true? Where will the next journey take me when I come to the fork in the road? You know, which side makes the most sense? That's a cool place to be. And I go back again to the fact that we have much more in common than I think we ever have in disagreement. And I take a lot of inspiration from that, from you. So, you know, that really encourages me as well.
Cool. Yeah, definitely. Well, Seth, I'm curious for you, if anyone, any of our listeners, and I know it to be true, I've definitely been in this place. Like, if anyone who's listening is considering atheism, if they're like, yeah, I don't know if I believe this anymore, I don't know if I buy this, what would you suggest to them? What's a good place to start?
Oh, you know, atheism for a lot of people is a scary word. I like to use it because I want to try to normalize it, but it was terrifying to me 13 years ago. I mean, it's a scary word.
Yeah.
And part of that is cultural. You know, atheism it's one of those words people throw out because ill God, or I hate God, or I hate moral things. And those, you know,
yeah.
Atheism simply means that I don't hold a God belief. And that's what I'm atheistic. I'm not theistic. I'm atheistic.
Yes.
And I don't really care too much about the labels. You know, some people don't like the word. They call themselves a seeker, or they think, you know, I'm on a journey, or you can decide how you want to frame your own journey, man,
yeah.
You know, but if you want to know more about kind of how somebody like me comes to where I got, this is going to sound shameless, but I wrote it in a 2012 book called Deconverted, which chronicles some of what we've talked about. You mentioned the God delusion by Dawkins. I know Dawkins is kind of a controversial and polarizing figure, but the God delusion is a really good examination of God belief. Mm. So don't let the title throw you off. Don't let Dawkins throw you off. His name is another scare word.
Yeah.
You know, I've had my agreements and disagreements with Dawkins on some stuff, but the God delusion, there's another, a guy, he's an ex-pastor. He was kind of the Billy Graham of Canada. His name is Charles Templeton. He's since passed away. And he was preaching behind the pulpit. Huh. And he came to a point when he was genuinely curious and decided to reverse engineer his faith. And he ended up on the other side. His name is Charles Templeton. He wrote a book called Farewell to God. Mm. You know, there's a lot of resources like that, or you can just go there. I've got links to a bunch of stuff at thethinkingatheist.com. We've got over 500 podcasts where we talk about everything from, you know, Christianity to Islam to Scientology to other stuff. We get into some politics. We do fun stuff. I did a story a couple weeks ago about just good news stories because I was so disheartened by all the stuff that was going in the world. So we just went through and gave hope in humanity stories. Nice. I'm doing ghost stories of October.
I love it.
Because I love Halloween and we love ghost stories. So every year we put together a series of stories where we go through ghostly haunted houses and we just do it for fun.
I love it.
So it really is a family and community. Short answer, thethinkingatheist.com or sethandrews.com. If you want to find any of that stuff, I've linked to a bunch of great opportunities and resources. Ultimately though, for me, my goal is not to like infect you with atheism.
Yeah.
My goal, I think, is just to encourage you that you are not a hand-me-down. You're not an echo of somebody else's voice.
Yeah.
You're not charged to carry the family mantle. You know, you don't have to live like them, think like them, speak like them, worship like them, vote like them. You get to decide what your value system is, who you are as an identity, what you think is right, and you get to sort of pursue truth on your own terms. And it's important you give yourself permission to do that. I know it's scary considering many of the consequences, but you know, take the journey on your terms. There is no way to describe how satisfying that kind of life is, despite the difficulties. It's the kind of life I would hope for you.
Yeah. That was good, Seth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. One of my favorite things that I see in Jesus in particular is like, well, how do you read it? How do you interpret it? Who do you say that I am? It's not spoon feeding. It's not brainwashing. It's, you know, it's just, yeah, like, well, here's what it is. What do you think? You know? And I think that giving people permission to think for themselves and to not be beholden to a family system or, well, this is what my dad believes. And I think a common thing that pastors say that I've heard is like, God has no grandchildren. He has only children. And it's like, as cheesy as that is, I think what I like about it is it's like, well, again, like you, to your point, it's not inherited. So yeah, I think that's great.
And that's a little bit, again, in contrast to the Bible, which instructs parents to train up the child in the way that he should go. I mean, the Bible is telling parents, you know, you need to download this stuff onto the hard drive of your kids so that they choose the straight and narrow. And that gets us back to, is that a moral thing? You know, I find, not to drag this on, Dave.
No, please.
But, you know, I want to draw a circle around something that, you know, your listeners can accept or reject. But, you know, if we go through the Bible and we say, well, this doesn't feel right, and I know that's not right, and You know, the stoning of disobedient children and slavery and the beating of slaves and, you know, the killing of pregnant women and, you know, the slaughtering of hundreds of thousands, blah, 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 you know, all of these things in the Bible, hell theology, whatever. And we say, no, I don't buy it. That is not, that doesn't pass the acid test for me. Mm. That's not moral. I reject it. Recognize that you are now making a moral judgment outside of the book that is supposed to be the moral foundation for an entire religion, right? Mm. You have to have the Bible, the Ten Commandments, the teachings of Jesus, Yahweh, whatever. You have to embrace that to be a good person is what they often will tell us from fundamentalist churches. Mm. But if you say, well, no, I don't think slaves should be owned. I don't think that women are second-class citizens. I don't believe in murder and torture and genocide, et cetera. I don't hold to the idea of being burned to death in hell. That's terrible. You just made a moral decision or judgment, but you made it outside of the book that fundamentalist churches say is the arbiter of moral truth. And I think that's revealing. Because you are now recognizing that you don't require fundamentalist religion and their holy books to be able to know right from wrong and to make a moral decision. Mm. And I just think that's something that if it happens in your own life, you know, recognize it.
Yeah.
You know, you evolved ethical systems, helping cooperation, benefiting ourselves and others, and knowing when something is wrong, you know, that's not a required, it's not owned by religion. And often we'll make moral judgments far outside these supposedly, in these supposed foundations of moral religion. I don't know, I just throw that out as kind of a cap to our conversation to see if anybody wanted to chew on that one.
Okay. Oh, I love it. I love it. Gosh, well, this has been such a joy. I really appreciate you coming on, Seth. One last thing I want to draw a circle around, as you said, is this idea of atheism or being an atheist. It's like that word, it can scare people, but I loved what you did in this reframing, and it's not rebranding or spinning it or anything. It's just, yeah, I don't believe in God. Or,
and I think an honest life says, you know what, if I discover that God is real.
Yeah.
You know, if that evidence presents itself, I need to be prepared to say, yeah, okay. And then after that, we can get into the morality of God. Does that God deserve my allegiance and worship? But an honest life is prepared to change their mind whenever good evidence is presented. And I'll make that commitment to you and your viewers and listeners, David. You know, if ever there is a demonstrable God, I'm committing myself to be prepared to say, you know, I will admit that it's real. I'll make that promise to you. Okay.
Yeah. All right, Seth. Well, where can we go? I know you mentioned the thinkingatheist.com. Where can we go to find you and all your social links?
You know, you can look for The Thinking Atheist on YouTube. I've got hundreds of uploads, speeches, and podcasts and whatnot. You can go to sethandrews.com. I've got, you know, a few links there. The most popular one being one that's dedicated to my dog, Linus. I actually have a new foster she's a foster fail named Gracie. She hasn't made it to the website yet. I need to add her, but I'm an animal person. Total pushover. And SethAndrews.com. You can meet me and Natalie and the dog on that site. And perfect. So that'd probably be one of the places I'd send.
And that's where we can find you. Awesome. Yep. Seth, thanks for coming on. It's been a pleasure.
It's an honor. Thank you again.
All right. Take care. All right. There you have it. How you feeling? You doing good? Pretty dang good conversation, if I do say so myself. I am a huge fan of Seth. It's weird. I feel like anytime somebody comes on the podcast, I just can't help but feel like they're you know, that much closer to me. It's like I have like this weird relationship with all of our guests, but hopefully that's a good thing. I mean, I don't know. I think it's a good thing. But it does remind me of this quote that I came across recently. Mr. Rogers. Doesn't everybody love Mr. Rogers? I don't know about you, but there's this quote that just really hit me, and it just says this: "There isn't anyone you couldn't learn to love once you've heard their story." And as we were just talking about towards the end there, ways that we other people, the othering of others, you know, ways that we, you know, divide ourselves and kind of keep people at arm's length. I mean, the more that we, I feel like if you hear somebody's story, if you talk to somebody, if you have a conversation, there's no way that you're not going to see that person differently, you know? And I feel the same way with Seth. I think he's an incredible person. And I feel like so much of his work is not dissimilar to what we're doing on the show, which is just, you know, leaning into the journey and exploring, being honest about where we're at. And, you know, wherever that takes you, you know, I mean, that, like, that's why I make it a point to have people on the show who have, you know, differing views than myself. You know, none of us want to live in an echo chamber, I hope. So, yeah, it's just really good. So, if you found this conversation helpful, enlightening, any of that, please reach out to us. Let us know what you got from it. As I always say, as we wrap this thing up, is, you know, we want to make this a conversation, and I truly mean that. You know, I feel like Christians and many pastors in particular, they're sort of known for their monologues. They're sort of known for their you know, their sermons, the sermonizing, or, you know, but I feel like, you know, a lot of the good stuff, the stuff that really connects us is the dialogue, you know? And so let's just keep making this a conversation and let's just keep exploring, shall we? So please reach out. Also, if you haven't already, please leave us a review. It'd really mean a lot. Leave us a hopefully a good review. I mean, you tell us. But if you do, we'll read it out on the air. And yeah, it just mean the world. So subscribe, reach out to us. If you have any questions for us, feel free to email us, refreshinglyhonestchristian@gmail.com. And until next time, thanks so much for tuning in, y'all. Take care. Bye.